13, take one.
Well, where do we start? John Young, it's been a while since you've flown. When was your last Gemini flight?
It was the 18th of July, 1966, as I recall.
And then the one before that?
Yeah, it was back in March of 65, the first Gemini flight.
So you've flown in two Gemini flights, 65, 66, and now comes Apollo 10, and the most ambitious and what must surely turn out to be the most exciting event in your life. Don't you think it's going to be that way?
Well, I've certainly been looking forward to it. Tom, Gene, and I have been training for 3 years, pretty much as a team, on it ever since we finished the Gemini program. And we've certainly seen a lot of water under the bridge, and I guess we're about as ready as we'll ever be.
John, I wonder if we could fill our listeners in just a bit on you and your background. I believe you originally came from Florida, near the spaceport there. Is that right?
Well, actually, I was born in San Francisco, but I moved at an early age to to Georgia, and from there to Florida, where I went to grammar school and high school in Orlando, which is about 45 miles from Cape Kennedy. And from there, I went back to Atlanta and went to school at Georgia Tech, joined the Navy, got into the flying business, and eventually into the astronaut business.
When you were a boy there on the sands of Florida and over around that beach, do you ever think it might become a spaceport to launch you into space three
Actually,
times or more?
When I was about 12 years old, we worked on a surveying crew, and we used to do a lot of surveying over there. And at that time, it was nothing but scrub pines and palmettos. I couldn't imagine that anybody would ever get anything much more out of it. Scrub pines, palmettos, and mosquitoes is what it was.
Were you interested in airplanes at all then?
Oh, yeah. I had a production line. I turned out one a week.
Large mosquitoes, I'm sure.
Yeah, large ones.
And at Georgia Tech, where is it? Aeronautical engineering that took your interest?
Right. Aeronautical engineering at Tech, and very good basic education. And when I got in the Navy, I was spent a year on a destroyer and then went to flight training and got my flight training in jets and went to a fighter squadron.
When did you come into the space program, and how were you selected as a NASA astronaut?
Well, in 1962, or 1961 it was, the country decided to try going for the lunar program, so they put out a call for a new group of astronauts, and I guess they had about 200 or 300 people that were qualified. Fortunately, I was one of those, and at the time I was in a fighter squadron out on the West Coast, and I was certainly happy to get through the selection process. The process lasted about 6 months, and it finally boiled down to picking 9 guys, but I met a lot of people that were in the runoffs, and I think all of them could have done equally. You know, I didn't see much to choose between any of them.
When did you come here to Houston then as an astronaut? Well,
it was in the end of September 1962.
And then your family has been here, and this has been your home since that
right,
time?
Right, since 1962.
Mm-hmm. Tell us about your family. How many children you have?
Well, I have a little girl, Sandy, who's 12, and Johnny, who's 11. And they're looking forward to the flight.
Is Johnny
as much as I am.
Is Johnny interested in space?
Yeah, he's a mechanics-minded, electrical-minded fellow. He builds all his own radios.
Mm-hmm.
Which don't work very much.
Well, since you've been an astronaut, you've been away from home an awful lot. How do you feel about what it's done to your overall life? Would you trade it for any other occupation in the world?
No, I sure wouldn't, and I think that's overemphasized. I think a lot of people spend a lot of time away from home. You, for example, and certainly all your colleagues, they don't get much time at home either.
Mm-hmm. Thank
I
you
think
very
it's part of the national way of life these days, really. If you're going to do anything that you like to do, you're going to have to spend a lot of time out.
Think people on the move is a way of life?
I'm afraid so.
Okay, thanks very much, John Young, and good luck on that whole flight.
Thank you.
Okay. Now, let's go right into the squib on the... Pull in a little closer, if you will.
Okay.
So we can just a little closer, too. And just over command module pilot and tell me your principal duties. Just we'll be filling in around, of course, in real time, but we're just going to...
Okay, well...
Wait a minute, we'll get it rolling again. Or did you want to tell me something?
No, I'm...
Okay.
Shoot the thing.
Hold on a second.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. 13, take two.
John, I wonder if you'd summarize the role of the command module pilot in a mission like Apollo 10.
Well, due to the complexity and the time between launches, which is sort of getting down pretty short, 2 month launch centers and 4 month launch centers, we divided up our training tasks. The command module pilot, the commander, and the LEM pilot are selectively trained, but the primary role of the command module pilot is involved in with knowing the command module as thoroughly as he can know it. It's a pretty complicated piece of machinery, and I don't want to take away from the lunar module pilot because it certainly is too. Now, Tom and Gene have spent, since Apollo 7, they've spent full time learning a lunar module, and it's a tremendously complicated thing. To know what to do at every time in a completely different spacecraft, and bear in mind they also have to learn how to operate the portable life support system, which is sort of a miniature spacecraft in itself without any propulsion system. And so they've been really involved in night and day in learning that vehicle. So that leaves me with a command module, which I was pretty well familiar with on Apollo 7, and the primary roles and some of the tasks. Now, Tom is going to fly the command module in the left seat through the translunar ejection, and after that time, I'll be pretty much in the left seat with a left seat task, as well as the navigational tasks and other associated systems tasks. It boils down to operating a vehicle this way. Tom has the machine in the left seat for launch and doing our preparations for the translunar injection, which involves systems checkouts, platform realignment, guidance system verifications. And then after the translunar insertion, Tom and I switch seats and I do what we call a transposition and docking. From then on, we pretty much alternate roles. I'm doing the navigation and the platform operations until we get into lunar orbit. And I have the pleasure of sitting in the left seat to monitor all the big engine burns, the lunar orbit insertion, trans-earth insertion burn, and of course doing the phase of orbit where we're separated. I'm in there in the command module trying to operate a three-man spacecraft by myself, and it's very interesting.
Gene Cernan says you're spring-loaded for all of your reactions there to their maneuvers.
Well, I think I don't like to put it in terms of being spring-loaded, but we've got the timeline set up so that we can do all these things that we have to do on time. And sometimes that means you move a little faster than you would in a normal situation.
Thank you very much, John Young. Okay, on rescue. Can we keep going? Are we that close?
Oh,
okay.
How long a bit do you want
that? This is one of James' questions, too. When it gets to the rescue mode, how do you go get them? And how long would it take you? Can you do that in 2 minutes?
Yeah. Well, but see, how long it takes, it's going to vary.
Mm-hmm. Okay, just describe...
Worst case would be about 7 hours and 30 minutes. The nominal one is 6 hours and 30 minutes, and we can speed it up a couple of...
I'll ask you then. Okay. This is, of course, one of the most exciting things to have. Yeah.
No, you're not. You're in a...
Okay. Okay. All right, let's get it rolling.
Okay. 14, take one.
John, if the limb gets in trouble when it's orbiting down low, close to the moon, if some of the engines don't work, if for some reason they can't come back to you in the command module, you as command module pilot must rescue the lunar module. How do you go get them?
Well, I hate to... It's not really as black and white as that. You see, the limb never gets in so much trouble it's completely disabled. It's always got some systems. It's got three different sets of engines. But the command module, it can, if all these things were to fail, the command module can rescue the lunar module by making several maneuvers culminating with a rendezvous and docking. And this can take, depending on the situation and where the engines failed on the lunar module, can take anywhere from, it can decrease 2 hours from the nominal timeline. In other words, it would only take 4 hours and 30 minutes to rendezvous, as opposed to, and in some cases, it could take one revolution longer, which would be 7 hours and 30 minutes about.
You get only a couple of chances per revolution, and a revolution takes 2 hours. Is that right?
Well, actually, you make the maneuvers to set up conditions for your terminal phase of rendezvous, such as the altitude that you want to start your final intercept from, the lighting conditions that you want to have during the braking phase, and those are really a function of where you are when all this business starts.
Are you always within visual sight or radar sight of the lunar module?
Yes, you are. And
both?
Both of you, although sometimes the ranges can get very extended. Our nominal range is about 340, 350 miles, could be out as far as 500 in a really bad case, but we expect to be able to see them at those ranges.
Could you affect a rendezvous rescue as low as the 10-mile orbit?
Yes. We did one just the other day, and it worked out very satisfactorily.
In simulation?
Right. In fact, we had enough fuel to complete the rest of the mission, just as though nothing had happened.
The command module can then go down to a low orbit and rescue.
That's correct. But you see, the lunar module is never in a 9-mile circular, for example. It's in a 9 by 45 or 9 by 60 when it starts, and usually you end up in some very elliptical orbit, such as a 9 by 200, the case we had the other day.
Mm-hmm. And so you are prepared for all of these different methods should something go wrong with the limb.
We're prepared. But as I said before, it's really a case of, it's not going to be as black and white as all that. Both vehicles are going to have systems that function. For example, suppose certain thrusters were to fail on the lunar module so he couldn't translate in certain directions. Then he could call over and tell me to use my thrusters in those directions. And so we could compensate for partial failures without really having either vehicle to go completely passive.
And at all times you will be ready to perform what is called mirror image maneuvers.
That's right. We're prepared to perform mirror image maneuvers for the last three rendezvous maneuvers, and before that we used what we call they're really phasing maneuvers. They set up things so that you can perform the rendezvous.
Thank you very much, John Young. John, you will perform the docking when Snoopy, the limb, comes back up and joins you. How has this worked out in simulations? Could you describe the experience?
Well, docking really is very easy from the command module. It's like, it's very much like in-flight refueling between two airplanes, between two large airplanes. You have a sight that you look through in the command module and a target that you look at on the lunar module, and you match the two of them up. And it's a piece of cake from the command module, and it's very difficult from the lunar module, primarily because of the smallness of the window that he has to look out of, and also he has to translate his control axis 90 degrees to where he's used to flying them, and the 100-pound thrusters on the lunar module, which sound very small to everybody, but when the lunar module is very light, which it is when it completes its maneuvers with only the ascent stage, one blip of a 100-pound thruster practically turns the vehicle over, you know. It's really, really sporty. So the control problems are not insurmountable, but they're difficult. But with a command module weighing 37,000 pounds, it's just like a Cadillac.
Well, how does that ascent propulsion stage look coming up at you there?
Well, in the simulations, it just looks like a big square piece of machinery. It's just about what you'd expect it to look like, just an ascent stage. He has a lot of extra power in there, though, and some of those skippy little transients they get into looks very interesting.
Is it in a nominal situation? Does it come up quite slowly and easily to you and then stop?
That's right. Just comes right up there and stops.
And then you move in and dock. That's
right.
Procedure.
The lunar module would come up facing you with the two windows facing the command module, and then he would pitch over 90 degrees and yaw a left 60 degrees, and he would be all lined up for my docking target, and I would just go in and dock.
Thank you very much, John Young. John, since you've been in the space program, I'm sure you've had time to think a bit about the challenge that this forefront of technology projects you into. You ever think on what sort of challenge this remains for you in the future? Where to after out into space to the moon? What is the challenge for you in technology and in life at this point?
Oh, I think the space program has really offers a lot, and I hope to remain with the space program. Maybe some more flights, and certainly on the engineering end of it. It's always been very interesting to me. I think the technology in the program is going to give us a lot of capability in this country, and it's very difficult to even imagine the kind of things that are going to be able that can be produced by a technology which can develop things like the fuel cell. We might, who knows, one of these days all our automobiles might be run by fuel cells.
What else occurs to you that you...
Well, we have a computer on Apollo that is not much bigger than the top of this desk, but it has 36,000 word memory in it. And that's quite a capability developed and put to proper use. It can revolutionize things like libraries and other things where you need problems solved instantaneously. Very difficult problems which you can't solve mathematically.
Do you see men on Mars, Venus, within yours and my lifetime?
Oh, I think so. Once we get, it's going to take improvements in propulsion and improvements that probably you and I can't even imagine right now, but those will be along. And certainly I think the human race is going to colonize the solar system in one way or another.
Thanks very much, John Young, and good luck on the whole flight.
Thank you.
Okay. Is that about it? How are we doing?
You're doing fine.
Okay, hold so. Anything else with anybody here? I think that. Anything, Jim?
The whole problem of mirror imaging. I think.
How much time do we have? All right, that's just, we got into the rescue, but we didn't actually talk about the mirror image.
Okay.
All right.
I'll try to explain that if I can.
But each time that they set up figures, you take opposite ones or something.
We got, how long are PC going
couple
for? A
couple minutes.
We got just 2 minutes.
Okay.
Right.
I'll keep it under that.
14, take 2.
John, would you describe more of what this mirror image means when you are preparing to perform reverse maneuvers to that which the limb may perform?
Well, the mirror image burn is a burn, for example, suppose the lunar module is coming up to do a maneuver we call a concentric sequence initiation. The concentric sequence initiation for the lunar module is a braking burn to put it in an altitude such that it's 15 miles below the command module, and he'd be pointing. He would, if he to do that burn, his engine will be pointing toward me. For me to do the mirror image burn, my engine will be pointing exactly opposite to him. So if he comes up to that burn and he can't do it, then I fire my engine, and we end up in the same orbit as if he'd done the burn. That's what it amounts to. So he's properly set up for his 15-mile altitude difference.
You prepare to do just the opposite maneuver in case the limb can't carry it out.
That's correct. And I think the probability of getting that far along, we've timed it so we can do it down a split second, but the probability of coming up the maneuver, getting ready to fire the maneuver, and then not being able to fire it is very remote.
Thank you very much, John.
Sure.
You want just a quick shot of him sitting in the chair?
Sure. A silent picture.
BBC usage of this.
I think BBC can use this.
I hope so.
Think Georgian translates into English.
I hope to be using forward throughout the mission, and then come to your statements now at a certain point that refers to something that you've said, and then possibly expand on it or discuss it with another member of NASA or an engineer to elucidate further on.
To explain it.
Well, that and to refer it to what's happening at real-time point. Can I ask you just one further point? If you, when you go into a mirror image, have I understood it correctly that the mirror image translates what you wanted to do in orbit A into doing the same thing in orbit B, which has been created because the lunar module can't get there?
That's right. Yes, sir. That's correct.
So a mirror image necessitates a further change in flight pattern, in a sense. However minor.
No, actually the time stays pretty much the same. It might change minutes-wise. Well, there's certain places where it can change a great deal. It's not a very simple thing to, but there's certain places where it can change a very great deal. Let me draw you a relative plot. If he was going to come in like this and then level off like this, and I was sitting up here like this, ready to do the burn, and I had to do it because he couldn't, then we'd end up, but our actual relative plots would be the same. It maintains the same relative position of the two vehicles. But, it certainly changes the orbits. It changes the orbits. Changes the orbits a great deal, the actual orbit.